are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. We are still under 10 episodes in. In fact, you know what? We're under 5 episodes in. So if you're listening, you're an early adopter and we appreciate you. Or you're a person that goes back and rewinds and listens to old episodes, and I appreciate you too. Sitting across from me is my co-host, Alex. Thanks for being here.
Love to be here. Thanks, Tyus.
So last week, before we started the podcast, we were talking about some Bill Maher stuff. And you said there was a little bit of controversy, and because I am constantly unaware of what is happening all around me, will you fill me in?
Sure. And we're, again, the Bill Nye stuff, is that right?
Is that what I said?
I think
what did
so.
Did I say Bill Maher?
I think so. Okay. I want to make sure, yes. So
you're talking about Bill Nye, the Netflix
yes, stuff.
Okay.
Yes.
So I do know that Bill Nye put some stuff on Netflix, and I thought it was actually, I watched it, I thought it was pretty good.
I haven't had a chance to watch it myself. It was just put on Netflix recently, and of course I've added it to my list of things to watch on Netflix, mostly because I always thought that one of the things that was done really well, especially when I grew up in the 90s, was there's a lot of science shows that you could watch. You had the late 80s, early 90s Reading Rainbow with, of course, Geordi from Star Trek hosting. It was kind of fun. You had the Magic School Bus, which I thought was the best thing ever because you teach magic, you teach science through magic. I mean, it's like the most incredible thing ever. And
I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
That's a really clever way of thinking about it.
Yeah. I Miss Frizzle's like a personal hero. But anyway, yeah, if I was a witch and had science or had magic, I would definitely use it to teach science. That would be,
that's funny.
That would just be so cool. Like, let's take a field trip and see a thunderstorm.
That's kind of like a political party running to try and make a smaller government. I don't know if that relates, but, you know, maybe a little bit.
Yeah. And of course, Bill Nye, the science guy in the 90s, was a huge hit. I can definitely say that it's one of the things that got me interested in science at an early age. It helped me think about the world in terms of questions, and it made me a bigger skeptic. But the most important thing, the thing it did above everything else, is it said that you could be a scientist at age 8 or 9. I mean, you didn't have to be a college graduate. You didn't have to wait for, you didn't have to wait to start experimenting and learning and questioning.
Yeah, I think Neil deGrasse Tyson talks about how children are often like banging pots, and adults go, stop banging the pots. And he's like, no, they're learning about rhythm and acoustics and all kinds of things. So don't stop a kid because they already know the scientific method. They're using it. You're the one getting in their way. Now, yeah. What's the controversy going on around this show?
So one of the things that Bill Nye did with his Save the World Netflix series is that every episode, and I went ahead and looked through the episode list and some of the descriptions, but it seems like every episode targets a piece of science that is considered controversial from a political sense, but and I'm not going to say settled science because I don't think I think that's an oxymoron, but there's a large body of evidence for or against in terms of the support for a theory. So often in science, we don't say that something's settled, that you just generally don't hear that. What you do hear is that there's a large body of evidence that supports this or that theory. Sure. And of course, you can get into some more stuff. Hold on, I'm going to geek out. You can read a lot of the philosophy of science, which I think is perhaps even more important. I think that's what really the controversy surrounding is, what is science? And I would encourage people to read essays by Karl Popper about the falsifiability criterion and how science has to be both falsifiable and testable. There's a lot of what's called the Austrian Circle, which developed a lot of the early philosophy of science. And I would definitely recommend you read essays by that group of people. And then later on into the 20th century, you started to see essays by people like Salmon here in the States. And he wrote about the effect of research programs or mental sets in science and how scientific revolutions or whenever we change those mental sets.
So are people frustrated with the show because they think that he's specifically picking items that people are going to be upset about or frustrated with? Because it seems like
want the ratings, actually going against it.
Huh.
Yes, that's what's so crazy, is that people on the right and the left, one of the things he said earlier this week after all this controversy broke, and I thought it was incredible, was science is political. It's just not partisan.
Sure.
And that's what I think there's been almost this universal fringe right and fringe left, you know, sort of response. And even in the libertarians, it's been especially bad about it too, which is one of the reasons that I was upset personally, is that people were upset about it because he was talking about something that is supported by a large body of evidence one way or another. He's making these points. He brought on guest stars that would basically be people from different sides of the equation, and has this sort of discussion with them about, you know, the sort of the hearing the opposing viewpoint and sort of refuting some of those points with what the science, the scientific method has meddled out. And people, and it's been on many different issues. Like, every episode has pissed off some group of people.
Well, I think his first episode was climate change.
Yeah, that, so of course, that went after all the people who think that climate change is some huge multinational conspiracy, even though the International Panel on Climate Change, the fact that the climate is changing, that's nearly indisputable. And if you don't believe it, I encourage you to design your own experiment, track it over the next 10, 15 years, and publish your results. That's what science is. I'm not saying that you have to agree with me. In fact, I encourage you not to, and to go test it yourself, and then decide whether or not the data indicates that there's a trend in the climate. But one of the areas that's always of dispute is to what degree did humans factor into the climate change equation?
But it doesn't really matter. I mean, I guess, no, that's wrong. I'm wrong. And the reason I'm wrong on that is because if we can say that humans affected the climate in a negative way, then we would also have the same responsibility to affect it in a positive way. So I'm definitely wrong on that statement. But my previous employer was Apple. And Apple in the United States doesn't use any energy that is not renewable. It's 100%. The only place I think in the world that they're not 100% renewable is in China, and they're working really, really hard to get there. But they put on their website about that. They said, you know, we're not here to debate climate change. We're just here to fix it, and that's what they went after. So if you, the fashion show mall, if you're flying overhead, you'll notice that the top of that place is just covered in solar panels. That's all Apple's, and they've got these massive just wind farm, everything. They've got all kinds of things like that. And they have the ability to do it. And they're fortunately not really restricted right now from doing something like that. But I like the idea of saying, like, you know what, let's not debate the something that we can show is a thing. Let's solve it. And if you have the finances to do it, because it is still expensive, then you can do that, and it actually lowers your expenses over time, right? Like, if I put solar panels up here and I go 100% electric, yeah, the upfront expenses are a lot, but then my expenses over time are going to be reduced. And on the other hand, if I'm a business owner and I go, you know what, those solar panels are really expensive, I should get in that business, and I start competing, well, that's going to drive the prices of those solar panels down and increase the technology.
And we've seen the cost of solar panels fall over the last decade, and that's one of the reasons that I think that government subsidies are bad. And obviously, there's many reasons. But in this particular area, they've helped keep the price high because it's the market price plus government subsidy is what the what they're going for right now. And in fact, eliminating that subsidy would increase competition and lower the cost even further and make it more attainable for other people. But in any event, he goes after homeopathy. He goes after chemtrails. He goes after... you know, basically, what I'd like to say is the BS pseudoscience of the world, the things that people just believe are true, and we know they're not. In this day and age of wealth of information, we know they're not, because if you don't believe me, test it for yourself. I've had people at work that will tell me, oh, such and such isn't true, and I'm like, well, then I'm not going to debate you on it. Just you prove me that it's true or false, because if it is science, then it can be proved true or false. It's testable and it's falsifiable. And that's why I think that philosophy of science plays such a huge role in why there were people who were anti-Bill Nye this week, is because they don't understand what science is. They seem to think that it's just that, well, 90% of scientists believe, like it's just a religion, and it's not. In fact, the holy grail of philosophy of science is what's called the demarcation criterion, And it's where you're trying to find that line between science and religion. And it changes over time because things that right now, for example, string theory is completely religious. There is nothing scientific about string theory because to prove whether it's true or false, it is falsifiable, but so is the statement there is a God.
Yes.
But I would say not testable.
Sure.
That's the second piece to the criteria established by Popper, which is that it has to be testable. And since there's no known test for there is a God or string theory, which is below the Planck length, so there's a quantum uncertainty associated with measurements in the string theory, and that
we are so geeking prevents, out right now.
I know. I'm so sorry. I did a degree in physics, so I feel very passionate about this, and I want to thank a lot of the professors I had at the University of Evansville for really opening my eyes. And of course, I took a philosophy of science course there from a guy that taught philosophy at UE for like 40 years.
But I think the fair thing to say here is that while you can say something is currently not testable, that doesn't mean that it won't be, right?
True. We could always develop tests and
it
we
makes
do
predictions and all those
then
things.
Then it's not, that's when science sort of changes, right? That's when it grows. When something becomes testable, either through engineering expansions or just a knowledge expansion, then we can, you know, sort of include it in the circle of what's considered science. And I think that over time we found that there are things we test now that in 150 years ago, there was no possibility.
Yeah, when Einstein came up with general relativity, we had to figure out a time to find a solar eclipse to be able to test it, right?
Exactly.
So it was like, well, we have the idea, but we can't even test this until the circumstances are right.
And special relativity couldn't really be tested until we had the ability to fly at such speeds that we could do tests like atomic clocks completely perfectly synchronized, cesium atoms, and then take the time differentials in the like nanosecond range from having one on a jet, one in a stationary frame of reference, and see in fact that the one that was in the frame of reference that was going close some more
much
significant
faster
percentage of the speed of light, right? It did slow. The time passed a little teeny tiny bit slower.
And without that technology, GPS wouldn't work because the satellites are moving so fast. We have to put different clocks in them.
Yes, we have to do a special relativistic correction for GPS.
Yeah. This all reminds me of Ricky Gervais. Did you see that interview where they were asking him about science and religion and all that stuff?
I didn't.
So the notable quote in it is he said, "Well, if you have a science book and you've got a religious book, and we were to destroy both of those pieces of information, and we started fresh right now, the religious book might be written in a lot of different ways, but the science book eventually would get back to where it started." Because eventually we're going to test these things and we'll find out what we know is true. And so while string theory or multiverse theories, all those things, we currently can't test them.
And those are all religious opinions. Quantum mechanics is merely stating that there is an untestability, there is an uncertainty that you can apply to measurements there. And how you choose to interpret it is you know, up to you as a scientist, and that's what forms what Salmon wrote about, the research programs, and how it's very important that in science we have a way of putting the data together, of telling the story, and a lot of people like to believe that that story is part of science, and in some ways it is. In some ways those stories have been around so long that they are part of the scientific theory. Like, for example, Newton's laws of motion are in some ways testable, but in other ways aren't.
Well, and in many ways they failed. Like it turned out to actually be wrong.
Right. Einstein later on came by and corrected the special theory of relativity, but for as long as it was testable and to the degree we could test it, it holds true. We still teach it in science classrooms today because it is still holds true. It's still approximately true.
Yes.
When you don't have anything near the speed of light. And you have to be going like 99.99% the speed of light to really see significant relativistic corrections of length contraction or time dilation.
And to put Newton and religion back together, he mentioned when he was trying to figure out his laws and apply them to the entire universe, and he couldn't make it work. He couldn't make it work even within our solar system. He then just attributed the rest to God and said God must be making small alterations because there were some holes in his theory, just as there were holes in Einstein's theory, and Hawking came along and kind of filled in some of those gaps with Hawking radiation and some other ideas.
And that's what's important about science and to remember is that every generation of scientists, we have people who grow up with some mental sets, but also have their own ideas. And sometimes those pan out. And to wrap this up, I'm going to talk about Fritz Zwicky really quick. Fritz Zwicky was a guy who was considered almost insane in the scientific community in the early 1900s because he proposed that a large amount of the mass in the universe was contained in what's called dark matter. And at the time, this was not testable. It was falsifiable, of course. There is or isn't dark matter. And today, we've come to narrow down dark matter candidates to one of two really important fields, weakly interacting massive particles, WIMPs, or, of course, neutrinos. Although neutrinos are so small that in terms of mass, that they really wouldn't account for the large amount of dark matter we see.
And they don't really interact with anything.
But it wasn't until Hubble and Vera Rubin and some of these pioneers later on, when we had the technology to observe the rotations of galaxy clusters, that we could see that there must have been something. Because nothing would... In other words, these galaxy clusters should be flying apart, but they're not. And we were able to demonstrate that the only way they could be held together, the only way they couldn't be flying apart, is if they had a ring around of dark matter that had settled out in the outer rings of these galaxy clusters that was creating enough of a gravitational push in to keep these galaxy clusters from spinning apart through the centripetal force. And I'm so sorry for my listeners because I know I just totally geeked out on you. And again, it's important to remember that anyone can be a scientist. And that's what Bill Nye was getting at. And one of the things that made me very upset earlier this week and kind of sad was these people who were saying, well, he got a degree in engineering, so he couldn't be a scientist. And they were saying, this other person has more degrees in science, and so therefore that person qualifies as more of a scientist. And that's complete bullshit. I'm sorry. I'm going to call it out. That is the most blatant appeal to authority I've ever heard. Many of the scientific revolutions that have happened over the course of the last 300 years came from people with little or no formal scientific education or training, one of which was Albert Einstein himself. He was rejected for graduate school, was working in a Swiss patent office. He was told by his professors during his undergraduate that he would never become a scientist. He never would be able to teach and do all of the things that he later did. And it was there in the Swiss patent office, after he was told that he'd never be a scientist, never, that he developed his special theory of relativity, published it, and it was demonstrated. And then what you have is you have someone who is able to, somebody who is able to put out perhaps the most incredible body of scientific works to date, you know, later on with general relativity. And then, of course, he really took a hammer to quantum mechanics, and Einstein himself couldn't find holes in quantum mechanical theory. He spent the last third of his life saying that there's no way quantum mechanics is true. We don't get it yet. And every time he tried to show that a result from quantum mechanics was false, he failed. Einstein, we're talking about here. So I encourage anybody who's interested in science, anybody who's listening, anybody who thinks that things that Bill Nye was saying or that any scientist is saying are true or false, that they just get into science. Do it. Don't be a passive observer. Don't argue with people on Facebook about why you know it's true and that they're false and that this large body of evidence is obviously a conspiracy. Prove it.
Yeah. So how many people did we lose? Are you still with us? Okay. I know that was heavy, right? You're all getting an honorary degree for getting through that section of the podcast. Anyways, I love that stuff. I can geek out on that all the time. One of the things I wanted to talk about was Native Americans.
Okay,
sweet. So, real big gear change on here, but I've been reading some books. I found an online video, and I realized that some of what Native Americans in the United States are dealing with are kind of little microcosms that we could use as some pretty strong examples of what government intervention can do to parts of our country and to the whole country. So first off, I want to kind of give out the state of affairs with Native Americans in the United States. So right now they have the highest rate of poverty out of any racial group in America. So So whites are not really high on that list, or Asians, but Hispanics, blacks, Native Americans beat them as far as poverty rates are concerned. They also have the highest rate of alcoholism among youth of any ethnic group. And their child abuse rates are twice the national average. So there's a lot of problems going on in this group. And there's also a lot of government control taking place. So education, economic development, their courts, their road maintenance, agriculture, social services, all of that stuff is handled by the government, which grants them, it's over a $3 billion per year budget, broken up between the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Bureau of Indian Education. And on top of that money that they're getting every year, they also have 9,000 employees working for those agencies that are there to support these Native Americans. So that's one employee for every 111 people. So it's a tremendous amount of support they're getting. In fact, they get $850 million to educate 42,000 students. So what that equals out to, about $20,000 per kid. And the national average is about $12,000. So one more financial example, and I'll stop talking about the money part of this. Health services. So a couple years ago, their yearly budget was $4.6 billion, and yet there is widespread reports of drugs not being administered properly, broken equipment, unsanitary facilities. Anyways, my point is that money doesn't seem to actually be the issue. There's a ton of money. We're in the billions of dollars range here. We're talking about funding them more per student than the average student in the United States. So it doesn't seem to be a money issue. And yet, when you dig deep into this, it really does seem to be about government intervention. And I'm going to give you kind of one of the biggest ones. One of the really nasty ones is that on these Native American reservations, the land is held in trust by the federal government. So that has a major problem. Now, they did it for good intent. So they did it to say, you know what, we don't want anybody to be able to sell this land to somebody who's not a Native American. We want to protect the land so that it's only within Native Americans that have it. So the government was trying to protect them, or at least that was the initial intent. And as many of our listeners know, often it is that great intent that unfortunately has some terrible side effects. So, for example, because they don't technically own their land, they can't use their land, they can't say, we own it, they could never use that land as collateral in getting a loan, because the bank could never own that land if they were to default on the loan. So therefore, these tribes can't get money from banks to develop. And development is really, really, really difficult. They've got the resources there. So Indian land has a $1.5 trillion in resources, in natural resources, and that's an approximation, but about 30% of the coal west of the Mississippi is on Indian reservations. About 50% of the potential uranium reserves is on Indian reservations. 20% of oil and natural gas is there. Now, we probably have been harvesting this stuff a lot earlier, a long time ago. However, all these regulations make it really, really hard for them to succeed. So, for example, on mining coal, so they've got all of this coal, but to mine that coal, it takes 49 steps over four agencies, and each one of those steps can take several months to years to get approval. So it's almost impossible for them to actually to even do it in a lifetime. It's almost outside of somebody's lifetime to get this process underway. Another example is just to get a permit to dig a hole costs $6,500. And that's literally your property. You want to go into your backyard and dig a hole. It's going to cost you $6,500 not to dig the hole, but to get permission to do it. So, of course, they have no money. They have no way of doing it. And we seem to be concerned, deeply concerned, with the name of sports teams being called the Redskins. Right? Like we look at that and we say, well, that's the injustice there. That's not the injustice. The injustice is that we are in what we think is good intention to try and protect them. We have essentially regulated them and controlled what freedom they should have to be able to make whatever economic growth they want to have. We've restricted that away from them. Yeah, we can infuse as much money as we want, but it doesn't seem to change the problem. And it has left us in a situation where they're in dire straits. And if you think this is just a Native American problem, consider this on your land. Have you ever tried to get a permit? Like, all of these things can exist for us. We're continually trying to throw more money at education systems and things of that nature. And we can see that throwing more money is not necessarily the path to getting a better result. We might want to try and change our approach.
Absolutely. And thank you for giving me all that background. I actually don't know much about the Native Americans and the way that the federal government treats them. Of course, as a country, we've fucked up. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. And I think that, you know, a lot of people think, well, you know, we're going to give them reparations, we're going to give them land and stuff. But what people don't realize, the other side, I think that you're pointing out here, is that that money comes with strings. This isn't, we're giving them, you know, aid and, you know, they can maintain their own sovereignty, they can have private land ownership, something that we take for granted here. But in fact, the federal government retains, you know, the rights to this land, land that we force them on. And how dare we? We do this a lot as America. It seems like we go into another country or we go into another sovereignty and we tell them, we'll give you this money, but you got to do it our way. And think about maybe expanding this to the way that the national government treats the state government, it in the form of block grants. It's, we'll give you money for highways, but only if you do it our way. Only if the drinking age is 21 or higher. Yep. We'll give you money for education, but only if you sign on to do the Stanford 9 test or to do the whatever it is this year, right? Every time we do these, and again, it's good intentions, right? Give money to students. No one's opposed to that. What we have a problem with is the strings that come with it and the ways that the local and even state governments are completely taken aback and have their sovereignties taken from them by the national government when they can't decide how they're going to educate their own children. So it's no great surprise that, you know, the government is doing the same and worse to Native Americans. The fact that they've, you know, removed them from the ability to dig a hole in their backyard. I mean, that's just ludicrous. Imagine if you wanted to put in a fire pit and you had to pay $6,500 in permits just to dig it up in your backyard.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's insanity.
Yeah. So I think we're going to leave it there. Alex, if anybody wants to track you down, find you, where should they reach out?
The best place to reach me would be on Facebook, my page /AlexMD.Liberty.
Cool. You can find me at TyusFrance.com or on any social media at TyusFrance, and find us at LPNevada.org. We hope you share the podcast with everybody, and until then, make it about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.